I defy you to crush this course and not get psyched out of your mind. I'm gonna pop some tags. Only
got $20 in my pocket. The Chrono Shock
13.
They didn't tell you, did they?
Your company is closed.
You closed the company?
Everything's computerized now.
People have a deep mistrust of machines. Have you seen Terminator?
Yep.
Or two?
Mm-hmm.
Or three? Or four?
All of them.
Vic, I got it.
Google.
You got us a job at Google?
Not a job. It's an interview for an internship that could lead to a job. Nick, this might be the last chance that we got.
Come in here. You got to come in closer. Yeah. You won't be able to see us. See how small the webcam is? No, kitchen to cheek.
We can see you guys.
Okay, great.
Good. You got us?
Hi, my name is Billy.
We can hear you fine as well.
Oh, great.
Welcome to Google. This will not be your average internship.
We're looking at some sort of mental Hunger Games against a bunch of genius kids for just like a handful of jobs.
That's a Sharpie, by the way, genius.
That's my fault.
I'm Lyle, one of the team managers. Pound me.
Oh, normally just putting the fist out without the words is all that's necessary.
Come on, bro. Fist me. Get up in there.
Yeah, that's definitely not right.
Your interns?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Deal with it.
You're so old, though. I thought you were important.
Sometimes the long shots pay off the biggest.
Our team's a joke.
You guys got to start believing.
This reminds me of a little girl from a steel town who had the dream to dance.
She had to strip down to nothing. She had to sit in that chair and arch her back, and she reached up and pulled the chain to nowhere and doused herself with water.
Flash dance.
Oh, boy.
We have rules. The red paddle indicates no, green paddle, yes. Having a beer with your boss.
If you want to grab a cold one with me, you let me know.
I will not be grabbing a cold one with you.
Your job? Find the bug.
Why don't the two of you guys right now go and find the programmer?
His name is Charles Xavier.
He's a professor at Stanford.
He's in a wheelchair.
Got it, Stanford wheelchair.
Yes.
Charles Xavier?
Very funny.
Professor Xavier, we know that it's you.
You found me out. Cyclops, Rogue, we're all here. Now, I want to share some of my wisdom with you.
Oh my God! Professor Xavier's a total...
the internship. You know, it's really interesting. It's really rough today to get to the place where we actually love our job. I mean, you know, for some of us, we're working in really difficult environments. For others of us, we're working for a really difficult person, maybe. You know, maybe you feel like you're underemployed, or maybe you feel like you're unemployed, and you're saying, you know, I don't know what is next. And so over these next few weeks, we're going to be taking a look, as Eric said, at some of the summer blockbuster movies of the summer. And we're not necessarily endorsing these movies, but what we are doing, though this one was very funny, I have to tell you, I sat back and I thought, man, just the fact that we're doing this movie says a lot about the community of Crosspoint. So, you know, it's interesting, though, because what we are going to be doing is we're going to be finding, as we see in the internship, that there are these threads, these principles, these topics that come out of the movie that the Bible actually has a lot to say about. And God has a lot to say about. For example, the internship. We're talking Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. They're playing these characters who are in their 40s. They lose their job, and they're selling watches. And so, you know, as you kind of heard there in the scene, they said, you know, watches don't matter anymore, at least according to the movie, because everybody's looking at their iPhone for the time. And so these guys have to go out, and they actually have to reinvent themselves. They have to reinvent themselves in order to be relevant in the job market today. And so they get this internship at Google, and it's really fascinating. It raised some really fascinating topics, you know, questions like, you know, how do I know if I'm stuck in my career? And you know, how do I know that what I'm doing is actually making a difference? And, you know, because I know for many of us, we might even have a job right now, but we feel like we're stuck. For the others of us, you know, maybe you're in a position where, you know, you don't have a job and you're kind of looking for that next thing, but you still feel stuck. You feel like, man, my skill sets just aren't needed anymore. And so there might be others of us who are maybe at the end of one career and we're getting ready to look for another one or go to the next phase of our life, but we don't know where to go. And the positive of this is that, you know, it's somewhat natural to find ourselves being stuck at times. And there's actually a growth that comes out. We actually grow when we find ourselves at places like this. And so we're going to look today, one of the things we will look at is how do we know if we're stuck in our job? And so in your weekly, as Eric said, there's actually a list there. I want to talk through these a little bit. 5 ways to know if you're stuck in your job. And maybe you hit some of these. Number 1, you dread going to work. All right? Now, I don't want you to raise your hand if this is you, but, you know, studies have shown that the two most dreaded days of the week are Monday and Wednesday, hump day, for whatever reason. And so, you know, some of you might already be dreading what's coming tomorrow. And I think there's a reason for this. I think one of the reasons is because we're incessant when it comes to our work. I mean, our work oftentimes is unceasing. We looked at this last weekend as we wrapped up the Live More series. And if you weren't here for that, if this is your first week with us, we were just looking at margin in our lives. And you can go to our webpage and you can download the free podcast. I'd encourage you to listen to that if you feel like you work unceasingly or you dread going to work. Because one of the things that we shared last week, I actually shared my personal margin story and how, you know, I came dangerously close, closer than I ever cared to really think about, to losing some of the most significant relationships in my life. Because there was no margin relationally in my life. I was just working all the time, always pushing, always going. And, you know, I think that it's unceasing in many cases. You know, back when I was born in 1973, which, by the way, makes me 40, I know, if you're trying to do the math in your head real fast. You know, back in 1973, the average CEO made 27 times that of the average line worker within their company, you know, benefit and salary package. Today, over 300 times. Not double, not four times, not 10 times, 300 times the average CEO makes over the average employee. In fact, I just saw this week, Abercrombie and Fitch CEO, 1,640 times the average benefit and salary package of anyone in his organization. 1,640 times. Bloomberg reports that over the last 63 years, since 1950, this has increased 1,000%. And, you know, and we're not even going to get into kind of the rightfulness or the wrongfulness of that within a capitalistic society. That'll be for another time. But let me just say this. If you find yourself on the upper end of that, if you're kind of in that upper level management, you're making that kind of money, here's what's often going on. You're like, man, I make a lot of jack. I mean, I've got to kind of begin to kind of, you know, qualify my presence. I've got to justify my existence. I can't unplug because, you know, I got to show that I'm worth what I'm making. I can't, when I go on vacation, I feel guilty if I disconnect. I've got to respond to emails all the time, always take a call because I've got to show that I'm worth what I'm making. And so we work incessantly. If you're on the other end of that continuum, it's almost a no-win scenario. You know, then you feel like, man, I've got to always work to show my bosses that I'm actually worth what they're paying me. I actually have to work so I don't lose my job, or maybe you only work make a basic pay rate. And so you've got to work two jobs, three jobs to provide for your family's needs. And so again, you're working unceasingly. Either way, at the end of that, we're going, oh God, work. And so we dread our work. Second way to know if you're stuck in your career is I feel like I'm in a dead-end job. Now, this is interesting because I think most of us can endure difficult moments, scenarios, even job situations, if we know there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But I think, you know, if we find ourselves in a place where there's no light, or we just feel like, I don't have any advancement in this position, or there's no way for me to get promoted, then we find ourselves feeling like we're just in a dead-end job. Third way you're stuck is, I don't feel like my work has real significance. You know, and this is an interesting one. You know, maybe you went into this career field thinking, man, I'm really going to, you know, touch people's lives. I'm going to impact people for the good. I'm going to change the trajectory of lives. And it's just not happening. Maybe, you know, what you thought you were going into isn't what it actually is. And you feel like you don't have any significance in what you're doing. You know, the fourth one, and don't raise your hand on this, but I dislike my boss or coworkers. Maybe you have a toxic work environment. And, you know, I'm going to let you discern what that looks like or what that means to you, but I heard just this past week that people don't quit jobs, they quit people. And so maybe that's where you find yourself. You're just working with a really, really difficult person. Fifth sign we know if we're stuck in our career is, you know, I feel like a failure. I feel like, you know, maybe your expectations are just way too high, and so you feel like you're never able to hit them. Maybe you just feel like you're not able to accomplish anything within your work, or you don't feel like you're good at it. You feel like you're constantly, you know, banging your head against the wall. I think one of the things that contributes to this is, I think we have more job insecurity today than we've ever had in the history of our economy. I really do. I think, you know, largely up to this point, we've been an agrarian culture over the last decades and centuries, and that meant that people were farming. And so if you're a farmer, you wake up in the morning, you go out and plant seeds, and you go then and, you know, weed the fields, and then you hope that rain comes. And if rain comes, then you have a crop, and you harvest your crop a few weeks or months later, and then you eat, you get paid through that. And there's nobody, you know, looking to squeeze you out of your job. And yet today, you know, even at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, people like Henry Ford, when he established the assembly line, You know, people would go and they'd hit their marks. They'd stand on their marks on the line, put a bolt in, you know, screw it into the nut. It'd get passed by. The next one would come. They'd do the same thing. But you see, there was even then there wasn't a fear of like, oh, I wonder if some low-cost import from Japan is going to come in and undercut us. Or I wonder if some multinational investment crew is going to come in and right-size our company. Or is somebody, you know, some young and cheaper, you know, employee going to come and take my job? And so I think, you know, today we face all of these things, and I think it creates a great degree of insecurity. And oftentimes we feel like, man, I'm not even being successful at what I'm doing. And so, you know, as you look at this list, I mean, just think to yourself, do I hit one of those? If you hit one, you're probably good. I mean, you're probably not fully stuck. Maybe been a bad week or a bad month or a bad quarter. But if you find yourself hitting two or three of these, and you're like, you know, yeah, I agree with that one. I'm dreading going to work tomorrow. I dislike my boss, which my employees should not be raising their hands right now, by the way. You know, if you're hitting two or three of these, then you might be stuck. You really might be stuck. And so, and yet, what's interesting, here's what God has to say about this. In the Bible, very beginning, very first thing we see God doing in all of the scriptures, the very first thing that's reported, Genesis 1, God's working. Look at what it says. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so he creates, he's working. And then it lays out this blueprint for the next 7 days of what work looks like. You know, day number one, it says God goes out and he separates light from darkness. And he's like, whoa, that's really cool. He's like, that's good. And he's like, I worked, I produced something, I separated something. And he's like, that's the end of day one. It was good, I was productive today. Then it goes through days like 2 through 6. And he does things like put birds in the air. And he says, man, that's good. And puts beasts on the ground. That's good. He creates reptiles and fish in the sea. Man, that's really good. And you know, he's like, he's working. He's producing. He's creating. And get this, the greatest entity that you and I could ever imagine or know, he goes to work every day. Every day. That's how the Bible begins right here. A few years ago, I came across this really interesting literary kind of writing on what the creation story would have looked like if you or I would have been God. It's kind of fascinating. I don't know who wrote it. I didn't write it down, but I can tell you it's not me because it's really intelligent. And so let me just read it to you. Here's what it would have been like if you and I would have done creation. In the beginning, it was 9 o'clock and God had to go to work, so he filled out a requisition to separate light from darkness. He considered making stars to beautify the night and planets to fill the skies, but he thought it sounded like too much work. And besides, thought God, that's not my job. So he decided to knock off early and call it a day. And he looked at all he had done. And he said, it'll have to do. How many of us have said that? It'll have to do. I'm done. I'm out of here for today. On the second day, God separated the waters from dry land, and he made all the dry land flat and plain and functional, so that, behold, the whole earth looked like Idaho. And he thought about making mountains and valleys and glaciers and jungles and forests, but he decided it wouldn't be worth the effort. So God looked at what he had done that day, and he said, yeah, it'll have to do. God made a pigeon to fly in the air, a carp to swim in the waters, and a cat to creep upon dry ground. And God thought about making millions of other species of all sizes and shapes and colors, but he couldn't drum up any enthusiasm for any other animals. In fact, he wasn't crazy about the cat. This is as if Kurt would have been writing it, is what this is. Besides, it was almost time for the late show, and God looked at what he had done, and he said, it'll have to do. At the end of the week, God was seriously burned out. So he breathed a big sigh of relief, and he said, thank me, it's Friday. Now, some of you, that's a slow burn. You'll get that like when you're driving home today. All right, you know, the point is we need to reclaim the sacredness and the beauty of what we get to do. That's what the whole point of the internship was. It's reclaiming the sacredness of what I get to be about, reinventing so I'm constantly in a place where I'm promoting, I'm creating good in the world. And you know, here at Crosspoint, we love to work, and we got people working all over this place. Every single time we're together, you know, we have people that work a lot. You know, some people are on staff. They actually make a paycheck from here, a very small percentage of people. We have people that work around here that don't earn a paycheck from this place, but they earn a paycheck from like Roche and Lilly and, you know, other places like, you know, financial investment firms and flipping burgers at Dairy Queen, whatever it might be. But they come here and they give above and beyond those things to do something that we call volunteering. And when you volunteer around here, you're doing things like making our services pop, or, you know, making, you know, kids club or upstreet impactful for our kids, or, you know, welcoming somebody at the front door, serving coffee, brewing coffee, setting this space up. These are all ways that people around here work. And there's no paycheck attached to most of these roles, but there's an enormous amount of purpose, and there's an enormous amount of producing that takes place, which in the end means it's work. Now, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, when we think about work and purpose and that whole, I dread going to work, we have all these phrases that actually, we say often, that actually devalue work. You've probably heard this one. You've heard the one that says, ah, thank God it's Friday. Well, what does that mean? And that means, like, you're kind of like saying, hey, from Monday to Friday, I mean, it sucks. I got to get out of this hellhole so I can enjoy the weekend. And that's really what you're saying. And we say that all the time. It actually devalues our work. Or maybe you've seen this bumper sticker. Says, I owe, so it's off to work I go. As if I hadn't overspent, you know, at someplace this past month and the credit card bill wasn't so high, I would have no motivation for actually going to work. And then there's like the higher forms of art that create some of these. In fact, we did it a few minutes ago, a great song. Everybody, what is it? Everybody's working for the a little bit of Loverboy, right? Everybody loves Loverboy, right? You got to be over 40 and white, I think, to really appreciate that. I mean, that's funny. You have to admit, regardless of who you are, that's funny. You know, but we love that song. Everybody's working for a weekend. Well, is that all we do? Do we just work for the weekend? You know, and so right from the very beginning of everything, we see God working. We see him working. On day 6, he creates you and I. And he says, man, this is very good. And then on day 7, you know, the first thing we do, the first day we're created, is we actually rest. And then the very next day, we're off to the races working again. And so, you know, you and I were created with work in mind. I mean, when God put us into place, he created us in his image to reflect his productivity, his creativeness. And he actually says that, I want you to be the governors. I want you to be the governors, the managers of what I've created. Take a look at what it says, Genesis 1, verse 26. Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over the livestock, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And so he's saying, hey, I want you to take care of the environment. I want you to take care of the earth. In essence, what he's saying is every job does this. I mean, if you're a teacher, you know what you're doing? You're working, and you're taking care, you're stewarding the minds that God has created. If you're a sanitation engineer, you're working and you're taking care of certain environments in our community that prevent disease from spreading all over this place. Thank you, by the way, if you do that. That's a great thing. You know, if you're an architect, you're working and you're actually producing places for people to live and to share life and to enjoy with their families. You know, if you're somebody like in the medical industry, or you're working in like medical sales, or you're a doctor or a nurse, whatever it might be, you're working, and yet at the same time you're actually working so that people can maintain their health and live life to the fullest extent possible. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a teacher. All of these things do this. All of these things. If you're a union carpenter, whatever you might be doing, all of these things take place. And God says, this is of high value. You should hold it in the highest of esteem. And so, it doesn't really matter what we do for a job. God says, there's a high value in what you do. And so, 3 decisions. If you find yourself stuck, if you look through that list and you're like, man, you know, I might be a little stuck. 3 decisions that can help get you unstuck in your job. And by the way, before we look at these, I want to be really clear that I'm a firm believer the best place you can be when it comes to your work life is right where you're at. All right, this is not about you need to change jobs. Very, very few of us actually need to do that. This is about how do I get unstuck in the place that God has uniquely placed me in, and how do I become more effective in what I'm doing. And so here's the first way. You be productive. All right, you love being productive. All right, I mean, the picture we get in the Bible at the very beginning is that God produces things. I had somebody a while back say to me, well, but Kurt, that was like a one-time gig. I mean, that was like millions and millions of years ago God did that. To which I say, no, it really wasn't. I mean, it's still happening. It's like God's still out creating planets right now, I believe. He's creating solar systems and planets millions of miles from here that you and I will never see, because that's what God does. God wasn't like, oh man, I worked for 6 days. Thank God that was millions of years ago and I'm done. God doesn't think that way. God's a producer. God's a creator. I mean, get this, God created you and I in his image to produce. I mean, he also created guinea pigs and hippopotamuses, and yet he gave us something unique to us. We're the only created entity that he actually gave the capacity to produce at the level that you and I can do. Right? We get to be productive. In fact, there's actually signs built into our body that show this. You know what they are? Here's two of them right here. Retractable thumbs, or opposable thumbs. opposable thumbs. All right, I mean, this is actually a sign that you can sit at a keyboard and you can actually type an email or on your smartphone. I mean, this is a sign. If you could retract it, that would be awesome, right? That'd be we're doing that movie in like 3 weeks. That's like Star Trek or something, right? So, listen, your mind, you are built with a mind that has the ability to plan and strategize in a way that no other created entity does. Gerbils can't do it. They can't do it like you can do it. I mean, they can't like say, I'm going to go plant a seed, I'm going to weed around it, I'm going to hope for rain, I'm going to, you know, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, go produce a crop. Gerbils can't do that. I mean, you and I, we've been given this capacity. I mean, birds can create nests, so they can do a little. You know, beavers can create dams, but listen, not even close to the capacity that you and I have to create and to produce. I mean, think about it. No other created entity said, you know, man, a wheel would be a good thing. If I create a wheel, I could produce so much more in the same amount of time. I mean, no other created entity said, you know, man, I'm going to create a school so I can be a teacher and I can actually promote higher learning. I mean, you don't see the little goldfish in the ponds. I'm going to create a school. I mean, they have a school, but they don't, they, you know, they're not creating higher learning or anything, all right? I mean, work is honorable, and it's honorable because we get to produce something. We need to see our work as honorable. And by the way, again, maybe your full-time job is a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad. You know, you maybe don't get the traditional paycheck that other people get when they work. But listen, if you approach your work in that role as I'm producing something, I'm producing kids, I'm growing, stewarding kids, listen, your work is honorable and God loves that work. Right? In fact, this is one of the reasons empty nesters have such a hard time. I mean, you know, sometimes empty nesters, as soon as their kids all move out, there's a crisis. And it's awesome too. I mean, if you talk to somebody who just had kids, they're like, man, it's awesome, we're free, we don't have kids at home. And yet, there's often a crisis because they've lost their primary mode of production. They're like, man, I was you know, raising my son, I was raising my daughter, and now all of a sudden there's nothing there. That's why retirement can be dangerous. I mean, you know, so many times people are like, hey, I'm going to retire, and I just want to get to the place where I don't work, and I move to Branson, Missouri. Don't do it, all right? That's... I mean, for so many reasons, that's bad, all right? If you need to hit the slots, then hit the slots a little bit. But don't move to Branson. I mean, studies have actually shown that people that retire and then they actually just, you know, have no purpose and do nothing, they actually die sooner than somebody who has a purpose and is producing. So we need to be productive. Here's something cool we're going to do today. On the back of your connection cards, usually we do this at the end, but throughout the morning, I want you to refer to the back of your card because we give you some next steps every week. If you're newer to Crosspoint, on the back of the card you filled out earlier, we give you some next steps, ways to walk this out. Maybe this is something you need to say, you know, this is my step this week. I need to be more productive. Not spend more time, but I need to be more effective at bringing and seeing what I do is something of value to the people I'm serving. And maybe that's your next step this week. Second way to get unstuck in your career is to use your assets. All right, use your assets. You and I have assets. This is what God has given us that we bring into play when we work. You know, your hands are your assets. Your mind is your asset. Later in the book of Genesis, we see this thing that the fall, and it creates a curse. And this curse means that there's going to be fruitless labor. There's going to be times where you and I work from that point forward, and we're not always going to see fruit out of our labor. Which means maybe you're using your mind, the asset of your mind, and you're reading spreadsheets, you're crunching numbers for your business, and you're using an Excel spreadsheet, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of your work, you know, through some computer glitch or something, that thing crashes and you lose everything. Well, you know, that's fruitless labor right there. But listen, you still have your assets, you still have your mind, which is the ability to crunch. Or let's say maybe that, you know, you just have a winning personality. I mean, you could sell ice to Eskimos, all right? And you have this ability to just go in and make a sale, and you're stewarding, you know, one of your big key accounts for your business, and you're massaging it, you're taking care of their needs, and all of a sudden somebody, some outside competitor swoops in and takes the account. All right, again, that's fruitless labor right there. You've been putting a lot of energy into keeping this thing up, and you have no fruit now to show for it. But listen, listen, you still have your assets. You have that winning personality that actually, you know, allows you to even be in the game in the first place. You know, as a teacher, as a union car, whatever you might be doing, a sanitation engineer, you have assets you bring to the game. Take a look at Psalm chapter 90. Here's what the psalmist says. Let the favor of the Lord, our God, be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. So what our hands do, the psalmist is saying, is an asset that God has given us. Meaning God partners with us when we use our assets as we engage in our work. He actually uses this to be a blessing to people. Throughout the entire Bible, we see this. We see God valuing normal work. And it really bums me out, if I can be honest, when I hear people say things like, man, the closer I get to God, or the more spiritual I get, you know, I become, more spiritually mature I become, man, it's just more likely God's going to, like, rip me out of my well-paying job and have me go, like, you know, be naked in the Congo translating the Bible or something. I mean, I, you know, we have these, like, strange ideas. Or, you know, the more spiritual I become, if I really get close to God, he's going to make me give up my well-paying job and work for the Salvation or Army or, God forbid, Cross Point of all places. I mean, as if it's the worst thing, you know? And listen, only about 1 or 2% of us that might happen to. All right, let me be really clear. I said it earlier. God, I believe, wants you exactly where you are. I mean, God has placed you there for a reason. Maybe you're just stuck and you need to say, okay, how can I be more effective? How can I be more productive? How can I bring my assets and actually, you know, be a blessing to people? I mean, we see this all throughout the Bible. There are heroes all throughout the Bible that God uses in normal, everyday jobs to be an enormous blessing. I mean, think about Jesus, for example. I mean, Jesus, from the age of like 6 to 30, Jesus is a carpenter. I mean, Jesus, you don't read in the Bible him being in the workshop, being like, oh, man, this is a dead-end job. This sucks. I hate working with sawdust. I can't wait till I get to motivate people or raise people out of the ground. When do I get to do that? No, Jesus, you don't read that, because Jesus probably wouldn't talk that way. Kurt will talk that way. Jesus wouldn't talk that way. You know, but Jesus is perfectly content with what he's doing. Right? You look at like a guy like Paul, the Apostle Paul, who's probably responsible for more of the New Testament than any other individual through his epistles and his letters that make up a good majority of the New Testament. You know, Paul says something like, it's actually a noble thing. It's actually, you know, a highly thought of thing to be in a position like what I'm in, a pastor, where my position is actually paid by the generosity of others, building into the infrastructure of like a place like Cross Point. And then Paul goes on to say, but as for me, Paul, he says, I'm actually going to self-fund this deal. I'm going to actually remain a tent maker while I continue to champion the message of Christ. And it's not this idea of, oh man, I'm going to take one for the team. I'm going to leave, you know, this job. I'm going to take just a normal, everyday, you know, hate going to work today job, but somebody's got to do it. Everybody's got a cross to bear, so I guess that's mine. No, he didn't approach it that way. He's kind of like, you know, it's my job. It's what I do. I value it. I actually think Paul liked his job. I think he actually liked being a tent maker. I think he liked being able to sit back after he made a tent and be like, oh man, that's cool. Did I create that? I mean, see, in my work, I mean, it's very hard to quantify personally and spiritual growth within people. I mean, to be able to just sit back and be like, oh man, that's cool. Look at what was created right there. So I think Paul liked this. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what our job is. God can use me in whatever I'm doing. I mean, there are very few exceptions on that. If you're involved in like child pornography or something, probably not going to use you in that, right? That's not something God's going to be really like embracing. But I think in nearly all of our jobs, God can use us. You know, even if we feel like it's unspiritual or it's, you know, I'm underpaid or undervalued, God can use us. You have assets that you can bring to that. Again, on the back of your connection card, look back there. There's a next step for my assets. Maybe as you think about your job, maybe you're stuck because there are things you could be doing that you're not. Maybe there are certain assets or gifts that you bring to your position, and maybe you feel underpaid, and you're like, you know, until I get paid more, I'm not bringing this to the table. Well, you know, that might be why you're stuck. Right? That might be why you're stuck. All right, third one. Third thing we can do, third decision we can make is to embrace tension from vision. See, I love my job because it creates tension. I got a lot of tension going on right now. All right, and I enjoy the tension. I embrace the tension. In fact, the fact that I have a job, or maybe the fact that you want a job or a different job, that means you have a vision for something more that you want, and there's actually a tension that comes in that. When you begin to pursue that, there's a tension that's created, and you know why that is? You know why there's often tension in work? It's very simple, because it's work. It's work. I mean, it's hard. You should be sweating, and it should be pushing you, and it should require effort to, like, you know, produce and move things forward. And so, you know, it's interesting. We don't like tension. We think life should just, like, coast along. It's actually when we embrace the tension is actually when we begin to see things move. It's interesting because I've been, for the last, like, 3 or 4 years, I've been learning a lot about wine, which is something that's kind of newer for me to learn about. I never really had a reason to learn about it, but I've been surrounded. A couple of my friends are like have a like a vested interest in wine. One of them used to be a wine salesman. Another one has a father who raises his own grapes, has a vineyard, bottles his own wine. And in fact, one of them asked me a while back, they're like, are you a wine connoisseur, Kurt? And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like a wine sewer. I don't know if I'm a connoisseur. I know the difference between red and white and, you know, like them both, but that's about the extent of what I know. And yeah, it was very fascinating because what I learned was that, you know, the reason that grapes from France make, you know, exceptionally good wine above nearly any other place in the world is because the soil is very thin and it's very rocky. And as that grape plant actually works, goes through the tension of establishing its roots, it's actually in that tension that these grapes are produced that create great tasting wine that's unsurpassed to nearly any other place in the world. It's really fascinating. I mean, think about it. The tension is what actually brings about the beauty. I mean, that's why for you, you know, when somebody maybe says, hey, I want to connect with you, you know, they think you're interesting. Why do they think you're interesting? Probably because there's been some kind of tension in your life, and out of that, there's been something beautiful that's come out. I mean, the job actually gives flavor. The tension, we embrace the tension, it actually brings flavor. I mean, sitting on a beach all the time, having no purpose, it's good for a week or two, but, you know, you're not exciting. There's no tension going on. I've been coaching my daughter's softball team for the last 3 months, 10U softball, and we just lost this week in the quarterfinal game of the tournament, and it's kind of interesting because 2 years ago, coached with the same coach, a friend of ours whose daughter's also same age, and that year we won the championship. I mean, it was this cool run where we, you know, won the whole league, and my daughter, I think, thought that, man, Coach Katie and Dad are coaching again. Man, you know, we're going to win this thing. So she was really bummed when we, you know, when we lost. And yet, it was interesting because the season's been kind of up and down. I mean, it's been like we'd have a four-game winning streak, then we'd lose 5 in a row, then we'd win 4, and then we'd lose 4. And so we've just gone through a very turbulent season. And which, by the way, if your kids are in sports or extracurriculars or school, if they go to school, which hopefully they do, you know, I really try to help them see that this is their work, all right? Just like you and I go to work, this is their work. This is where they apply themselves, and they do the hard work of discipline and follow through because it's training them for later in life when they get a job. And so, you know, we lost this Wednesday, and I always send a wrap-up email to the parents at the end of the season. Like I said, we'd won some, we lost a bunch, but here's what I wrote to them. Let me just read it here. You know, I wrote to these parents. I said, you know, for as far back as I can remember, I've always loved sports, and I still do. Though today, it's much more than the competition. It's about life. It's about how the sport develops character and work ethic, team, and perseverance. It's not giving up when the scorebook says it's out of reach. And let me tell you, we had a few of those this year. Right? We had a few that were so far out of reach. And we're telling the girls, man, it doesn't matter if we're down 20-2. You play as if you're in the championship. You play to the end till the final out. And here's why. So that when you're in the final game of the tournament, whatever that might be, down 7 with a 24-hour rain delay, which is what happened to us this year. It's like we played one night, went 2.5 innings, got rain delayed to the next night. We're down 7. We have 34 minutes left on the clock because they're timed games. 2 outs, runner on second, 2-1 count. And basically, we needed to score at least 2 runs with 2 outs or the game's over. Because, you know, we can only score 6 runs an inning. So if we don't score at least 2, then the game's out of reach. There's no way we're going to do that in the next 30 minutes. And so, you know, that's kind of the backdrop. And listen, it would have been easy for these girls to show up the second night when we come back for 34 minutes, down 7, and just be holding their heads low. We're not going to get this. What's the use? It was amazing. These girls showed up. They were ready to play. We got the 2 runs. They played the best inning and a half of their season. And even though we lost, there was a lot that was developed because what they learned earlier in the season, the tension of when things weren't going their way, they carried through. Here's what I wrote to the parents. I said, the learning and experience gained through the season takes over. The girls now know what it's like to push through the tension and give it what they've got to the final out. Tonight, it would have been easy for the girls to show up, hang their heads, simply go through the motions, but they didn't. On paper, it was still tallied up a loss. But in life, it was a win on character, perseverance, sportsmanship, and team. Because see, to these 11 and 12-year-olds, this is a job. I mean, they're going after the sheepskin right here. I mean, what they're learning is that when we go after the sheepskin, as a result of that, even when we push when it seems like it's out of reach or it seems like it's not making a difference, that we actually have opportunities and options that other kids don't have. If they show up and they're like, what's the use? Man, we're down. Why? Let's just give it our bare minimum. See, it always produces other options. And this never like goes away. I mean, that tension is there when you're 35, it's there when you're 45, it's there when you're 70. That's what a job does. See, a job, if you're a stay-at-home parent, yeah, there's a tension. And it's difficult at times. And when you push through, you realize I'm producing something. It maybe qualifies you for something else. When you're a student, you're in school, you're studying, you're going through the exam, you know, you're pushing. You know, that qualifies you for something else. I mean, you show up, you do the hard work, you're faithful to the job, even if you have a vision for something else. You say, you know, I'm gonna love this right now because this is where I am. And when you do that, it gives you options that other people don't have. And so, again, maybe for some of us, we need to evaluate. You know, am I in attention right now? And if so, what does it look like for me to lean into that? That's another next step on the back of your card there. You can take a look at it. You know, maybe there's a tension going on and you just need to lean in and allow that to grow you. Because maybe even though you have a vision for some other job or position, maybe this is the qualifier. Maybe this is what's qualifying and growing you to that next new place. You know, it's interesting because the Bible established work before anything else. I mean, before anything else. In fact, we look through the Bible and there's other things established. We're in a worship environment right here. We're in a service of worship. Awesome. Glad you're here. And yet what's interesting is, you know, later in the Bible, if you read the Bible, God actually gives instructions on how to read the Bible, on how to pray. You know, singing is good when you get together. He gives some instructions for how to, you know, do a traditional kind of worship service if you want to do it that way. I mean, he kind of lays this out. But what's interesting is those things all come like three books later in the Bible. I mean, the very first thing that God establishes, he hasn't even told him how to worship yet, and he's teaching him how to work. I mean, he hasn't even told him how to pray yet. He hasn't told him how to read it. There's not even a Bible yet, and he's given him a picture of something. What is this picture? It's not that they're like thwarted spiritual individuals because they don't know how to worship yet. You know what he's saying right here? He's saying to them, hey, your worship is through your work. See, when you work, you actually reflect who I am. When you're engaging and you're producing and you're steering things somewhere, you're actually engaged, you're actually reflecting the very core of the nature of who I, God, am. And here's the thing. Tomorrow, when we go to work tomorrow morning, you will be able to work wherever you're at. It's a decision we make. I mean, it might be you have some sales calls to make. You know, do it in a way that honors God. I mean, it might be that you got to clean up some, you know, sanitation stuff. Do it in a way that honors God. You might have hard calls to make tomorrow. You may have to lay somebody off. Let me tell you what, that's a privilege to be in a place where you can do that in a way that it honors God. I mean, it's a blessing to be able to work if we choose to make it that way. God, I'm praying right now and asking that you would help us to see a value in the work that we do. God, thank you for giving us this value. You know, every now and then we forget that we're just not some amalgamation of random proteins. That you actually created us with a purpose. You put us here to be productive, to be creative, to steer, to develop. And God, help us to be satisfied wherever we're at right now. Even if we feel like we have a vision for something else, help us to be satisfied, to show up tomorrow, to be faithful, to bring our assets, to say, you know, how can I be productive today? Because God, when we do this, this is honorable and we actually reflect who you are. So God, thanks for enlisting us. Thank you for the employment we have and we're seeking after. And God, as the band leads us here in this song, God, I just pray that you'd awaken us. Some of us, we really need to see a clear picture of maybe what you want to do and the situation we're in. I just pray that you would awaken us, God, to see how you can use us exactly.